WGN and Jason Turner joins us now, the Chief Investment Strategist for Wintrust Wealth Management. Jason, what was your reaction to what the chairman of the Fed said, Jerome Powell, in Chicago yesterday?
Well, it was interesting that he quoted Ferris Bueller as part of his comments and said life moves pretty fast. The comments that followed were about as expected, that the Fed is challenged with its dual mandate of stable prices and full employment because of some of the policy announcements, and is likely going to sit on the sidelines, in effect, until they have more clarity on a policy direction and potentially the data to back up those impacts to the economy.
I thought it was interesting, right? He didn't say it's going to be terrible or that inflation's going to go through the roof. One might bet on that, but he said we're going to wait and see what happens, right?
Correct. He said he feels the Fed is well positioned to wait for greater clarity, which tells us that there's nothing to panic from any central bank or monetary policy perspective at the moment, but it's very unclear where things may go from here.
Well, if inflation were to rear its ugly head, as they say, then what would or could the Fed do about that?
Here's where his comments around the dual mandate being in conflict come into play. If the Fed is looking at an environment where prices are going up and inflation is rising, like we saw a few years ago, they're going to hike rates to pull those inflationary pressures down, in effect, slow the economy. However, if the economy is already slowing because that is sort of the end impact of large tax increases or tariffs, higher prices and slower economic growth, they're going to have to weigh the impact they could have on slowing the economy even further, meaning pushing us closer to or deeper into a recession to combat prices. It's the trick box, if you will, that the central bank was stuck in the 1970s.
Well, about the heat of the economy, I wonder what we want. If people are still out spending money, that will mean more dollars chasing fixed or fewer goods, and that's inflationary. But that's also people shopping and spending money. We don't want that to happen?
We do want people shopping and spending money to hold up economic growth. 73% of economic growth here in the United States comes from consumer spending. That's very important. What we saw, though, with this week's retail sales announcement, at least I believe, is some measure of front-running by U.S. consumers, where consumers are, in effect, buying earlier than they may have planned with some of these retail purchases to avoid much higher prices. You heard Ford come out this week in their comments to the market saying they are likely to raise prices next month unless there's some kind of alleviation of the tariff pressures they're facing on steel and aluminum.
What do you think is going to happen, Jason?
Well, I think we are sitting in this period of a pause, a 90-day pause on the sweeping April 2nd tariff announcements that roiled the market so significantly. If we do see trade agreements emerge or some sort of revision of the April 2nd announcements to lessen the impact, particularly to countries outside of China. It seems China has been the major focus here. We likely see the markets enter a period of a little bit more relief, maybe go back up a little bit. We see the consumer breathe a sigh of relief. We're at the second lowest reading on the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index ever at the most recent month. That likely abates a little bit, and we can breathe for a little while. If we don't, the market is not pricing all of those tariffs in quite yet. And if they are in fact enacted 90 days from April 9th, we're staring at another market downturn.
That's interesting because I thought maybe it had. For instance, after Jerome Powell gave the bad news, and obviously Donald Trump's very upset about that based on his comments on his social media platform, but the market didn't take a 2,000-point dip. I think we're sitting now net from yesterday, what, off maybe 400? I wondered if maybe this this is as low as it's going to go. I guess not, huh?
Well, I think for the time being, yes. This is seems to be a base forming in market patterns. It's already been a tough year for markets. So we have to remember that markets had already declined significantly through the end of March before we got the April 2nd announcement. So that April 2nd announcement drove them further down. Markets recovered somewhat. And over the last several days, yes, we've seen down days and up days, but we're starting to emerge a little bit out the other side of that shock announcement on April 2nd. I think it's very plausible that you see a gradual rise in equity markets while we're in this period of hopeful resolution of some of these trade concerns. And if that comes to fruition, you know, markets can march higher.
Jason Turner is the chief investment strategist for Wintrust Wealth Management. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you, John.
Bree Fowler's here, senior writer at CNET. Can you tell us about the Meta suit and what's happening this week?
Yeah, Meta had their CEO was testifying in court this week about Meta and whether it is a monopoly. You know, the FTC has filed suit against them over antitrust concerns, saying that it bought up companies like Instagram and WhatsApp to, you know, basically snuff out the competition.
It's interesting, though, that but the same agency that is suing them also approved those things, right? What has changed?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, these were, especially Instagram, you know, they only bought it for something like $1 billion. They weren't very big back then, but, you know, they turned them into these huge divisions of business for them. I mean, arguably, you know, Instagram is much more profitable and, you know, money generating than something like Facebook, which used to be the company. So, you know, it's a question of whether it's gotten too big. And it's, you know, definitely been a question for the big tech industry overall these days.
But when you break up an AT&T or a Standard Oil, it's also because the consumer gets hurt because the prices are too high. I don't pay anything for Facebook. So what's the government's argument? Yeah, he touches everything. But how is that harming me?
Well, you kind of do pay for social media, just not in the way that you pay for oil and things like that. You know, we pay every time we, you know, enter data or post something. That they're making money off of us. That's why it's free and there isn't some kind of subscription service. They're making lots of money off of ads. And something like Instagram generates lots and lots of money in ads. And at the same time, you know, because there really isn't a whole lot else out there, people are kind of stuck with it, whether they get great service or great social media or not.
I'm no fan of any of the social media platforms these days. But do you think that the government has a good case here, or has Zuckerberg got a good case here?
You know, it's definitely something that I'm curious how it's going to play out in court. In this case, it's supposed to take weeks, you know, whether that, you know, because it isn't something that you're actually shelling out for. And it's not something that you have to use either. I mean, a lot of people have just gotten away from social media these days. But at the same time, you know, not just the Trump administration, but the Biden administration before it really kind of wanted to make a statement about big tech and the role that big tech plays and the influence it has. So this definitely plays into that.
I know the Biden administration pressured Facebook and Instagram to edit speech during the pandemic because they thought it was harmful or hurtful or inaccurate. And I know that Zuckerberg and them did not like that. But remember, Zuckerberg also kicked Donald Trump off of Facebook. And I'm sure the Trump administration remembers that, even though Zucks tried to sort of repair that, right? He gave $1 million to the inauguration, et cetera. He said nice things about Trump, but it'll be interesting to see how this goes. And this may take 2 months, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I think it was pretty telling during the inauguration. You had not just Zuckerberg, but all these big tech titans, you know, Jeff Bezos, the head of Google, you know, TikTok was there.
Yeah.
All these tech companies want to make their presence known and were given very visible seats at that event. And yeah, they gave a lot of money too. So tech is definitely a player in politics in a way that it hasn't been before. And it'll be kind of interesting to see how that all shakes out.
NVIDIA, I saw its price went down. It's been up and down lately, but more down than up because of the tariffs and so forth. What's the NVIDIA news today?
Well, there's always lots of news with NVIDIA and the markets, for sure. But on Tuesday, the U.S. government, it announced or, you know, disclosed that the U.S. government had blocked the sale of some of its AI chips to China without a license, and that it was going to start requiring a license for some of these future sales. And, you know, when you put restrictions on what and who people can sell to, that is not something that businesses like or that shareholders like. NVIDIA has been able to kind of get around these, you know, restrictions on sales of AI chips to China by selling them chips that were just not as good, that, you know, got under that government threshold. But now that apparently isn't going to cut it anymore. So not only can they not sell, you know, they're losing that revenue, they've got these stockpiles of chips that, you know, they might not have anything to do with at this point.
What's this Department of Foreign Disinformation that the administration has liquidated? I'm not saying that well. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, this was part of the State Department, actually. It was an office that was designed to deal with misinformation and disinformation that was coming from the likes of Russia, China, and Iran. And no one is disputing that these countries have tried to spread disinformation in the United States. I mean, there were a lot of stories, you know, going back to 2016 and before about Russian bot farms and Russian, you know, trolls on things like Facebook that were posting and amplifying things that were just inaccurate, you know, dealing with the election, with COVID, things like that. So, you know, the government was keeping an eye on these things just because it is detrimental. But apparently we're doing away with this office now. You know, Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, has concerns about free speech and how an office like this could be used to censor Americans. So you've got that issue there, too.
Seems like the administration's working both sides of that argument these days. But okay. That's the latest from Bree Fowler, senior writer at CNET. Thank you, Bree.
Thanks for having me.
The Wintrust Business Lunch now with Emily Stewart, the senior correspondent at Business Insider. Welcome back to the show, Emily.
Thanks for having me.
Here's your headline: Americans worry about what Trump means for international travel. You're not talking about airline rates, although I understand that fewer people are flying domestically or internationally as a result of maybe what the tariffs mean. You're talking about something else. What are you writing about or running into here?
Yeah, you know, we've seen a lot of stories about tourism into the United States, right? Canadians aren't coming as much. Maybe this summer Europeans are a little hesitant. And I kind of thought, well, what about Americans? And you know, what we are seeing a little bit when you talk to people, you hear is Americans are a little bit anxious about traveling abroad this summer because they're kind of, you know, they're aware of how America is looking to some international trade partners on the world stage. We're being quite aggressive on tariffs. And when you kind of talk to people, whether they're traveling or expats, they kind of say, oh, you know, things are a little bit iffy right now. We are a little bit on edge. And maybe we're having conversations that we haven't had before. People have heard from people that sometimes foreigners sort of pity them, that say, oh, no, you know, like must be tough right now.
Sucks for you. Well, you know, there was a lot of dialogue during the NHL regular season, both when they had that international tournament and just during games where American teams would be in Canada or vice versa, the booing of the anthems. And you actually write in the opening paragraph about a couple from California who were skiing in Canada and the people on the chairlift were hostile to them, correct?
Yeah, I talked to a woman named Jen from California and she was going skiing up in Whistler, and on their first gondola ride up, there was another couple, she and her husband, and they were talking to them, and she said the woman in the couple was, you know, pretty angry at them, and not, you know, angry personally at them, but was quite upset about the way that the president has been talking about Canada as the 51st state, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, they kind of parted ways, and before they parted ways, the Canadian woman gave Jen and her husband some advice about a ski trail to take, and it was a pretty bad trail. And on the way down, they kind of thought, you know, I wonder if she did this on purpose to kind of get back to us.
You know, I have friends, though, who have been traveling, and they tell me that what they run into is more what you alluded to a moment ago. That is, people will forgive them. They'll say something like, we know it wasn't you. You're not doing this, but we don't like what's being done. Of course, the people that are traveling that are friends of mine aren't the president or the Congress or or Peter Navarro. But I wonder if these people are assuming that they didn't vote for Trump or don't support what Trump's doing. But anyway, what I'm hearing back is people looking at us with some sympathy because we've been such disruptors of late, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely what the sense I got a little bit more speaking with people was that it wasn't necessarily hostility, but it was sort of like, oh, what are you guys doing over there? You know, and I don't want to dive into politics at all. But anyway, I had some people say, you know, I would right away say, I didn't vote for him. It wasn't me. You know, I've heard from people since publishing this story about, you know, maybe saying, well, I plan to make sure to tell them I didn't vote for Trump. But you always hear people saying that they are Canadian, pretending to be Canadian. You know, I've also heard from Canadians saying, no, you guys did this. You have to own up to it. Yeah. Don't pretend to be us.
You know, it's funny you mention that, though, because a couple of weeks ago, there was a social cues question and response, I think, in the New York Times, and it was the family wants to travel internationally and the husband wants to dress as a Canadian and wear, you know, whatever that means, but wear lapel pins with the maple leaf flag so as to disguise themselves. And there was either the husband or the wife liked the idea, but the other one didn't like the idea. But I don't think that's extraordinarily rare right now either. I think Americans wonder if they want to present as Americans if they're traveling overseas.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. And I do think, I mean, this isn't necessarily new. You know, I traveled quite a bit around when Bush was in office in the early 2000s. I was in Argentina, I was in high school at the time. But people would ask me pretty openly about President Bush and, you know, the war in Iraq and things like that. And we were teenagers. I don't think this is necessarily a new phenomenon. If you think back to, again, the 2000s, when Americans were saying these aren't French fries anymore, these are freedom fries. So this isn't necessarily a new conundrum for Americans, but I do think it is. We are being quite aggressive, especially when you think about our stance on trade, the way kind of our leaders are talking about Europe right now. At least our government is not doing very popular things on the world stage, and that does trickle down to tourists.
You do point out that, but you're right, this was a topic of conversation when George Bush was president, when Joe Biden was president. Just pick whatever the affair is that the U.S. is involved in, and it's always something, and you might run into that. You do mention that Rick Steves has commented about this. What does he say? He's the syndicated travel columnist.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent some time on the blog just looking at the comments as well as, you know, their kind of advice. And I think, you know, where they come at this is just saying, you know, you want to be, it's in a moment for dialogue, right? I do think if you want to talk about politics on vacation, you should. But I also think it's fair for people to kind of say, I want to get away. I don't really want to talk about the news. But we are in a moment where that might not be possible. But I do think, you know, in general, the rules of travel are always the same, right? Be polite, try and support the local economy, don't be a jerk. And Americans kind of have this reputation sometimes anyway that you can kind of hear us before you see us when we're traveling. And so it's just the normal kind of be mindful stuff that we should all probably take into account.
And I'll just give voice to the notion some people might feel, which is, I'm traveling in your country spending money, you're welcome, and I don't have to apologize for being an American. Yeah, I'm not going to be obnoxious, but I do or don't support these American policies, but I'm not a trade representative, and you let me book a room in your hotel, so I think I get to be as American as I want as well, right?
Yeah, I definitely think that's fair. I mean, like you said, you're supporting the local economy, you are buying a hotel room, you are going out to eat and stuff. I also just don't think it's bad to take a step back and, in general, when you're traveling, and say it's good to be polite, it's good to be nice, and that goes for all sides.
That's Emily Stewart, a senior correspondent at Business Insider. Americans worry about what Trump means for international travel. I might just throw this out, 312-981-7200. A lot of you do or have traveled for business or pleasure. Spring break wasn't that long ago, so I'm wondering what you heard. Why don't you shoot us a text, and we'll pass that along, too. Thank you, Emily. Nice to talk.
Thank you.
Let's update you with more business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Barnes & Noble bookstores are making a comeback, and the Chicago area is included in the company's expansion plans. Barnes & Noble will open dozens of stores nationwide, including one in Naperville, slated for opening next Wednesday. The company says it opened more bookstores last year than at any time in the past decade. The Barnes & Noble comeback is credited partly to the popularity of social media accounts featuring books, including TikTok's hashtag BookTok. There's a new snack food collaboration in the works. Chicago-based Molson Coors is teaming up with Pringles for limited edition flavors called Beer Can Chicken and Grilled Beer Brat. Pringles products will also feature the flavors of Miller Lite beer. Miller Lite's logo will be included on those Pringles cans. The limited edition products will be available nationwide starting in May. There's a third beer brace steak flavor that will be available exclusively at Walmart. The release coincides with the start of grilling season, which is a key sales period for beer brands. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Okay, here we are, the Thursday before Easter, and Jim Gaffigan has a few thoughts about the holiday.
Easter, that's a weird tradition.
Easter, the day Jesus rose from the dead. What should we do?
How about eggs?
Well, to explain that connection is USDA history buff Ann Eflin, who says Easter got its start centuries before Christianity showed up.
Originally, it was a holiday that celebrated a Germanic goddess, the Saxon goddess Esther, or Easter. And she was the goddess of spring and fertility.
And eggs are all about fertility.
The Persians and Egyptians actually exchanged eggs that were decorated in spring colors as a way of celebrating the spring. The early Christians sort of adopted that.
Well, that helps explain why we dye Easter eggs, but how do those eggs magically show up on Easter morning? Mr. Gaffigan?
Don't worry, there's a bunny.
Here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail.
Yeah, that bunny tradition goes again back to ancient Germany.
The German story is that there was a poor woman who had decorated eggs for her family to find during a famine, and that I think they were to sort of identify which were their eggs, and they had to search for them and find them. They found this nest of eggs and looked up. They saw a rabbit hopping away, and that's how they decided the rabbit had brought the eggs.
And this evolved into a tradition where kids would hide their hats and bonnets around the house or yard, and supposedly the bunny would leave eggs in them. But how did we get to candy eggs?
The transition from eggs to candy seems to have been the result of an advertising campaign near the end of the 1800s by a European candy company as a means of selling their candy Easter eggs.
Well, it's a lot cheaper than using real eggs. On the food calendar, it's National Cheese Ball Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Okay, so let's, on the Wintrust Business Lunch now, find out about another local business. Here's Lou Rubin, who is the co-founder of Hometown Coffee and Juice. Lou, congratulations. Sounds like business is going well.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me, John. Appreciate it.
Tell me about your locations. You're more on the North Shore or suburbs, right?
Yeah, so we started, my wife, Julia, and myself started Hometown Coffee and Juice in October of 2018. It was a coffee shop there for many years that we purchased, and we transformed it as it's known today's Hometown in 2018. We hit the ground running. We were very well received by the community. We've since expanded, so there's now three locations with two more to come. And really, I would describe us as an all-day cafe and gathering place. We're more of like even an everyday cafe. So you'll see every age, children and parents and grandparents, friends and neighbors all there at the same time every day.
We're talking Glencoe, Winnetka, Lake Forest, and now Glenview and Northbrook, right?
Correct. That's exactly right.
And so is, what's the feature there? Is it the coffee? Is it the juice? I get your picture that it's more than any one of those, but tell me a little bit about the beverage there.
I think, you know, what we've done successfully is, you know, I always love the culture of a coffee shop where you can come on your own terms and you can just experience whatever you want. You can read a book, meet a friend, do a business meeting. And what coffee shops don't do so well is bring in really good quality food. So what we've done is we have an array of offerings. So there's fresh smoothies and juices. There's, you know, toast like avocado toast and bagel sandwiches and fresh salads. And by doing that, you get an experience that you just don't get. And we focus very deeply on that whole idea of an experience versus a transaction.
Yeah.
So when people come in, they can have a menu that's desirable for really any hour of the day.
What's the grab-and-go feature? What are you doing there?
With grab-and-go, it's an evolution of what we've done. We get a lot of requests to go to different cities and to bring our product to their towns. And this is an opportunity for us to do that. So we started by bringing grab-and-go into each of our locations. We committed to a pickleball facility called Dink's. It's new in Highland Park, to do a grab-and-go section there, with the idea that we can expand it and grow it and put it into other locations as well. So we just launched that a couple weeks ago, and we're really excited. It's got some special products that aren't in or on the menu in the stores. And so far, it's been very well received.
As a coffee vendor, are you seeing or anticipating higher prices?
Yeah, coffee prices are definitely going up. So they're trying to hold the line on the wholesale side of it, but it really is hard to do. So absolutely, prices are changing, the prices that we pay, and I imagine that trend will continue.
And I presume that happened rather suddenly. I mean, is this tariffs or is this just the cost of business and everything gets more expensive?
It's both. It's actually both. And, you know, everything in the last few years has continued to go up. You very rarely hear of something going down.
Yeah.
Eggs certainly are an example of that. And it is just a trend, and it's something that we're probably going to have to stick with for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, maybe then being a gathering place rather than as well as a place to, you know, buy a specific product is it helps your business.
Well, it does because, you know, people are craving a human connection and experience, a place to go with anyone in their family, a place to go any time of the day. And you want to escape, I think, these days, certainly. And we offer that. We offer an opportunity. It's a very super welcoming place. There's patios in each of our location that have heaters outside and chairs and umbrellas and everything that you would want to make yourself comfortable and want to be there.
Hmm.
And if you think about it, there's very few places that really focus on that right now. It's hard. If you go to a restaurant, you have to sit down and have an experience that's going to be cut off when your bill comes. And we try not to do that.
Hometown.
We don't do that. We actually create a place where people can stay.
Hometown Coffee and Juice is the name of the business. They're on the North Shore, hometowncoffeejuice.com. If you want to see what they do, Lou Rubin is the co-founder there. Hey, Lou, keep up the good work. Nice to talk to you today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.